Blog Talk Radio.
Reverend Edward Pinckney, the only pastor in the history of mankind to ever be sent to prison for quoting the Bible. But right now, we're going to listen to a little Martin Luther King. You're now listening to Pinckney, the Pinckney Show.
Sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification. One day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted. Every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, 'tis of thee." Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. So let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands.
I tell you, we are still fighting for freedom today. This is Reverend Edward Pinckney. Not only am I the president of the NAACP, I'm also the president of BANCO, the Black Autonomy Network Community Organization. And I tell you, we had a tremendous week this week. And as you know, I said every week that I court watch. I'm one of the few guys here in America that actually go to the court every single day. And I tell you, what I have watched this week is very disturbing. I have sit back and watch a prosecutor dismiss a rape charge. A young man who is an informant. He's an informant for the police department. He attacked this young lady, knocked her down, hit her 5 times in her head, pulled down her panties, and she woke up and fired on him and bust his nose wide open. He bled all over, left his DNA on top of her, and he ran. The police came, refused to arrest him, but later issued a warrant, then arrest him, and only charged him with a misdemeanor charge. And then on Tuesday, we went to court to have a trial for this young man. He never had a preliminary examination. He never was bonded over. And on Tuesday, they dismissed the charges against this informant. You see, what kind of justice do we have here in the city of Benton Harbor? I tell you one thing that people need to know. We need to take a stand now. We need to show these folks that we are for real about what we are doing. We need to take a stand against all the corruption that's going on here. And not only here in the city of Benton Harbor, the state of Michigan, but around the country. And we're going to have to pull that together. And we're going to have to do it together. We cannot do this all by ourselves. No matter how hard we try, we can't do it. But listen, before we go deeply into this, I want to bring on my co-host, my brother, a man who I love dearly, a man who stands for justice, Larry Pinckney. Larry Pinckney, are you there?
I'm with you, my brother. I'm with you.
I tell you, Larry, this has been one of them weeks when I'm at the courthouse that really drains you. Sometimes you just don't know what you want to do. You know you got to do something about this stuff, but yet you're trying to say you got to build you up an army of people willing to take a stand. And I tell you, Larry, I'm excited because I can actually witness this and say and tell the world what's really going on inside the court system. And they know, people know me. They know that if I say it, you could take it to the bank.
Mm-hmm.
You can
hear
take
you, bro.
It to the bank and cash it in, because I know what these folks are all about, and I know what they'll do unless we take a stand against them. But we don't want to get into that right now. Larry, we have a very, very special guest, a man who has been on our show once before. I love this man. But I want you to introduce him. Larry,
well,
introduce Eddie.
Thank you, brother. I want to say thank you very, very much. I'm very pleased that Eddie Perez is going to be with us, or is with us, in fact, today. Let me just briefly say that Brother Eddie Perez is a veteran of the Brown Berets. The Brown Berets were a Chicana organization that was closely, and I repeat, closely allied with the Black Panther Party. He is a longtime activist organizer in California, where he's will be speaking to us from. And all I can say at this point is let the show go on. Eddie will speak for himself. I love him. I respect him. He is, as I refer to him, one of my comrade brothers.
Eddie Perez.
Yes, how you doing, Brother Pinckney?
How you feeling today?
I'm feeling good, and I feel honored to be on your show and speaking with you and my comrade, Brother Larry. I likewise think very dearly of you and what you're doing for our people and all the people is a blessing, and thank you for having me on your show.
Hey, believe me, it's something that myself and Larry, and we also have Ralph. He's on the show also, Ralph Pointer. But we want you, Larry, won't you deal with this, Larry. You go ahead. I want you to talk. You know, you take over. Take control, Larry.
Well, all I want to say, because Eddie and I talked very briefly, is I'm hopeful, comrade brother Eddie, that you will, one, let the audience know what the Brown Beret organization was all about. That's number one. Two, if you reiterate that it, in fact, was closely related, allied, I should say, with the Black Panther Party. And three, I use the term Chicano, Chicana. If you'll explain what do I mean? What do we mean by that when we say Chicano? And four, I said 3 points, but the fourth point is if you will also tell us what you are doing presently, because I know that you are very, very active in the community as a serious, get down for real organizer. So it's up to you, my comrade. Take it away.
Well, thank you very much, Comrade Larry. I first of all want to thank all the brothers and sisters out there who are on the show today listening. And todos mis hermanos y hermanas, muchas gracias. And it's definitely, again, a pleasure to be with you. The Brown Berets is very similar, and actually we took the lead from the Panther Party, realizing that our communities needed a voice. Our communities needed somebody that would defend them if necessary. The objective wasn't to get out and, cause violence. The whole intent was to educate and bring education and resources similar to the Panther Party. But, of course, just like the Panthers, if we had to defend our people, which we had to do many times, we would do that as well, but it definitely was not our purpose. And so the Brown Berets were, there are many chapters like the Panthers throughout Southwest California, and even there was even one in Minnesota. And basically, just to reiterate, we were there for the people, food pantries, organizing, identifying individuals that we wanted to be our voice, politically. And so we realized that we had to do this on our own. Nobody was going to do it for us. Nobody was coming to do it. And we even had to deal with infiltrators. And we did there were many causes that we supported, the Panther Party supported. We worked together. We were on picket lines together. And, the struggle goes on. There's some youth who today have formed, chapters. We would hope in some ways that they wouldn't need to repeat what has already been done, but we give them kudos for their intent, their heart, to want to continue what was started then, and it ain't going to end for a while, so we need to continue this work. In regards to Chicano, for the brothers and sisters that hear the word Chicano, a Chicano is actually somebody of Mexican descent that has lived in this country, has been exploited and oppressed, and primarily treated as second-class citizens. And there became a point where we had to give ourselves our own identity, similar to my black brothers and sisters, prior to who knows when, you were referred to by a name that you didn't create. It was created by somebody else. And so, many may be familiar with Mexicans as Mexican-Americans, Hispanics, but we decided that we wanted identity, and it was around before I actually got in the movement, and there's a lot of controversy where it originated, but the fact is it originated, and we had to have a consciousness. You couldn't just be, it's not somebody that for the most part, is aligned with the system. I mean, they can be, but you got to have some commitment to the community. You got to be able to challenge the system. You got to speak from the heart. And Chicanos did that, just like, my brother Panthers and sisters. Basically, activism, consciousness, community commitment, and, revolutionary. Revolutionary
Let me ask you something. How the word Hispanic, how do you feel about that word?
Well, when I'm called a Hispanic, I tell people I'm a Hispanic causing panic. Number one, I don't like the word.
Right.
I don't like the word. Again, it was a word that was put on people of, basically Spanish surname people who were exploited by the Spanish and, just similar to other countries that, way back when were exploited and given a different name. The fact is we got that name and we got to move forward. But Hispanic, it's a name that takes away any sort of consciousness. And it's not something that you will ever hear me say. It's nothing that you hear Chicano activists say. And I appreciate it. Anybody listening today would not use that word. Latino.
Okay.
Latino is the word because, because there are so many different Spanish surname people from different countries, even Puerto Rico, my black Latino brothers and sisters, Cuba, we prefer to use the word Latino in a general sense. For those of Mexican descent that are activists, it's Chicano. And but in terms of Hispanic, no, it's something that I personally look down on when I hear that.
You know what, that's beautiful. I'm glad you explained that too, because sometime in my writing, I used to use the word Hispanic, and I really never knew what it really meant. I knew that it, when you say Hispanic, that means that all the Spanish-speaking people, and to me, I just wanted you to clarify that, because now I would never use that word again, thanks to you.
And there's many brothers and sisters that use that word and don't have any, you know, negative intention. That's not their purpose. That's what they hear in the media. And so they may say, I got Hispanic, you know, friends and nothing personal against them. But it, personally, for me and many of my comrades and friends do not accept that word and would prefer to use the word Latino. Thanks for clarifying that, because I think it's good for the brothers and sisters out there that are listening today to understand that. And I just, you know, want to say again, I appreciate my brothers and sisters listening, because this show is a vehicle for getting the word out, for bringing us together. And just like, you know, my comrade brother Larry writes for the Black Commentator, it's another vehicle to get the word out. And the word we have to get out has to be a positive word, a uniting word, not a vengeful, revenge type of bully pulpit or podium to speak at. We want our young brothers and sisters listening today, all brothers and sisters, to know that we're moving forward, you know, as Brother Larry says, onward, brothers and sisters. Positive, we don't want to repeat some of the things we did in the past that were wrong. You know, it was a learning experience. But again, I applaud you, I commend you for having this show and bringing brothers and sisters together that talk about the issues, you know, that actually are still involved, organizing, you know, putting the word out, you know, speaking truth to power. And it's just a pleasure to be part of this. It really is. Thank you so much.
Brother Eddie.
Yes.
Thank you. Right back at you. Right back at you, we were saying today. Right back at you. Check this out, bro. Would you tell our listening audience some of the things that you are actively doing today? Sometimes people think that those of us who were active in the Black Panther Party or the Brown Berets or in any number of revolutionary organizations from back in the day, that somehow we have just faded away. And the fact is there are plenty of us who have done anything but fade away. We are still extremely determined and active, and I know that you are one of those people. Would you tell us a bit of what you're doing in Southern California right now?
Well, currently what I'm doing is similar to what I was doing 40 years ago when older, you know, Chicano brothers and sisters, you know, came into the barrio and talked to us, educated us, organized us, you know, told us about our history, told us about, you know, our proper place in the context of this universe, of this world, and made us feel good about ourselves. And that's what I'm doing today. I'm trying to reach out to brothers and sisters. Primarily, my community is Chicano or Mexican, but we have, of course, brothers and sisters, Black brothers and sisters in the community. We have white brothers and sisters. So whoever I connect with, it's trying to educate, trying to motivate, and sometimes encouraging that they agitate, because that creates change. So some of the things I'm doing today is I work at a youth center in the barrio that back in the day we actually organized and went to the city and said we need something in our neighborhood. Us with, of course, the older brothers and sisters of that time. And still doing it today. I'm working in the neighborhood. I'm trying to organize, trying to have you know, as many young brothers and sisters listen to my word. Sometimes it's hard because, you know, they get caught up in this MySpace and, you know, these other sort of distractions that are created by the system, you know, so that they will vegetate instead of agitate. Also involved in some local campaigns here in Southern California, trying to get brothers and sisters elected. I was just recently a campaign manager for a sister that was elected to city council. And a matter of fact, we had to use some of the tactics from back in the day. Remember, I was talking with you, brother, and I told you we're going to drive a caravan and pull out the bullhorn and encourage people to vote. And I told you we're going back. We're going to do something we did a long time ago. And you said we need to do those things. You remember that conversation?
Right. I sure do. And you were absolutely correct because, as you pointed out, the system is doing the same thing today. They're trying to distract our especially our youth. From thinking, I like how you said, they want them, meaning our young folk, to vegetate rather than agitate. We need to be out there agitating. So I commend you, salute you for continuing, in the struggle, and you made it clear, be it black, white, brown, red, yellow, our people, oppressed peoples, need to, I'm going to use your word again, agitate, not
meditate.
Because back at you. I'm sorry.
Eddie, I just want to tell you, we really appreciate you and your work. But let me ask you another question. Have you ever thought about, actually court watching? One of the things that I have learned about court watching, I can recruit that way and get people to listen to me that never listened to me before. And I learned it because when you're in that courthouse, 90% of the people that's over there do not understand what the system is all about. And here in the city of Benton Harbor, their only goal is for the prosecutor to get you and your own court appointed to get you to plead guilty to something. And I know the work that you do is so wonderful because, I talk to Larry all the time, and he talks about you a lot. But, I always think of tools of how we can organize, get people together. And I have learned.
Yeah, let me just give you some feedback regarding your question. I think what you're doing is needed. We all have abilities, ideas that will empower our people. And you being there, maybe trying to inform individuals, coming back with the word of what you heard of the day to let people know that, nothing's changed. They still got more black brothers and sisters and Chicano brothers and sisters in prison than they do in the universities. And they're coming from that court system. Plead not guilty is good advice because some people have been set up and they think they're going to get a deal. And the deal was, we got you, and they're going to keep you. And so personally, I'm not doing court advocacy, but we all have our roles, and I think that's a good role for any brothers and sisters that they want to go out there and actually get informed. With that, I would just encourage that they get involved with prisoner rights organizations, those type of organizations, because there's definitely a leakage for individuals that you're watching whose rights are being basically violated, but trying to connect back to the community in terms of social justice programs that are out there that they can actually have also a greater impact. But, no, I think what you're doing is commendable.
If I may say so, Eddie, let me remind you of the fact that you have, and that I know of, you have done some legal advocacy, and I'm sure you still.
Every chance I get, brother. Every chance
I know that's
I get.
Right. I know that's right. And I had want to say, I hate this word, I. The opportunity presented itself to me back in August when I was I had the opportunity to frankly be with my dear brother Reverend Pinckney in Benton Harbor to actually go with Reverend Pinckney. Remember that, Reverend?
Oh, absolutely.
And I mean it was just disgusting to see the hypocrisy, the injustice, blatant. Injustice in those court systems, in the court system, not just in Benton Harbor, but this was Benton Harbor, but we know it's nationwide. And like Reverend Pinckney, when he opened up the program, he talked about this individual who was an informer, and because he was clearly, not, I shouldn't just say was, no doubt still very much is, an informer, a rat, a stool pigeon, agent provocateur, whatever name you want to put on it. But he was that for the man. By the man, obviously, I mean for the system, because it's women too, unfortunately. But when he acting in that position as an informer, therefore gave him the right to do any despicable thing he wanted to do and still get off. And, you know, these kinds of things we see across the board, no matter what the offense, no matter what the situation. And, you know, I know that you, Eddie, and clearly Reverend Pinckney have been standing up for a very long time trying to get, and not trying, only trying, but actually getting people to see what is happening, and that we need to do something about it. And as you said, organize, educate, agitate. But go back to you, brother.
Well, no, yes, you know, every injustice that we can address is purposeful, no matter how big or small, because it all, you know, comes together in the end, and it's a domino effect. So it definitely needs to be done, particularly for our youth. Again, as I mentioned, you know, just overcrowding in the prisons, and you know, I hate to be one of those that say it's part of the master plan, but I believe it could be viewed that way, because it's definitely achieving a goal for the prison industrial complex. And just if I may point out to our listeners, is, you know, we talk about, you know, the things that we learned, you know, back in the day that can be applied today. You know, divide and conquer. That was one of the first things that, you know, we got educated by. You know, and back in the day, you had Chicano brothers, black brothers, and red and yellow uniting, and now today, many are dividing. And again, the reason I mentioned that, because related to, you know, advocacy for those facing possible jail time, in the prison system, what we find many times is brothers and sisters are divided. So part of the education has to be that not to fall into that trap. But we need more people to advocate. The best advocators are those in prison, or those in youth authorities, the juvenile halls, as they get older. But unfortunately, because they hold on just a second, brother. Thank you. Unfortunately, because they're going to have prison records, they're not going to be able to advocate.
Eddie, let me interject here for a minute. I want our listeners to know, because I refer to you as a community, a serious get-down activist and organizer, and I want our listeners to know just now why Eddie, you know, said excuse me, because he had to attend to some business. The business that Eddie has to attend to, even as he's doing this program with us, is that he is actually out in the community, even as he speaks on this program, and he's helping a sister get some food for her family, so her family can be fed, you dig? And this is a true revolutionary. This is what revolutionaries do. This is what organizers do. I just wanted to interject that so our audience knows. Go ahead, my brother. I'm sorry.
Before you go on, let me bring on Ralph. Ralph, are you there?
I am certainly here, brothers, and I'm glad.
Ralph, why don't you say hi to Eddie Perez?
Hello, Eddie Perez.
He's one of our brothers.
Love hearing your story. Love hearing about you and your work. Because we know there is so much work out there.
And let me real quick say that, you know, my love goes out to Sister Lynn. You know, please pass that on. And, you know, that's, again, part of the struggle in terms of advocacy, in terms of injustice. It couldn't be a more unfortunate circumstance. But, yes, Ralph, it's a pleasure to speak with you and to be with you on the show.
And thanks again, because yesterday we held a demonstration in front of the prison to recognize her first year in prison has been passed. And as you know, we spent the last 35 years fighting the injustice system in America, representing those who understood how bad it was, those who fought against it. And at last count, she had represented between 15 and 20 of our political prisoners. And, you know, through the years, you know their names, Richard Williams, Tommy Manning, Ray Lavasseur, Sekou Odinga. It just
yeah,
goes
there's many,
on,
yeah. Yes, I do recall those names.
On and on. So the point you were making earlier is that there's so much out there to be done and that you're involved in doing it. And as Reverend Pinckney is bringing information to people, this is the education we need in every area, but we must have a root and of where we're coming from. And one of the things that we always must insist on is self-defense and self-determination. These are not dirty words. They've made self-defense a dirty word. And this is why we don't see so much of it. And self-defense means we must defend our communities. And I'm going to tell a little story here. I'll try to get it in a few minutes if Reverend Pinckney will allow me. Back around 1973 in New York City on the Lower East Side of New York, which was a mixed neighborhood. I don't say an integrated neighborhood. It was a mixed neighborhood. And the fact that people were not killing each other every day and just going about their business, I consider it as one of the most successful mixed neighborhoods in the world. Now, in that period, it was a period where there was a lot of things going on. But one of the things we did was we formed an organization, no name, without regard to sex, age, national origin, religion. All people had to do was be interested in improving the community.
And that's what we got to put out to the community and to those listening today, because as you mentioned, it's a story of something that happened, but it's a story of something that needs to continue to happen.
Exactly.
So you need to become united regardless of race, regardless of religion, regardless of gender. We need to come together and form those organizations. If we got to go door to door, if we got to stand on a street corner, those old tactics that, you know, we used back in those days to recruit members of the community to be part of empowering others, part of the change.
One of the things
Brother Pinckney is currently doing that in his community, and it needs to go on. We need to continue that. And I know Comrade Brother Larry is definitely been active in his community. But it doesn't stop. We'll be doing this in 2022 because we know we got some work to do.
It's going to get worse because what has happened due to the capitalist system, and I say that's a bad term. It's an imperialist system that takes from others. That's a system we live under. And we are the colony inside of America. And when I say we, I talk about the non-white communities are the colony to be preyed upon by the imperialist system. First fired, last hired, miseducation, underfed, the whole nine yards. But in this period, the organization, without name, was dedicated to self-defense and self-determination, and therefore we had a set of rules. And one of the rules, no rape. It was not to be considered, not to be condoned. And lo and behold, someone from another community came in and was in the process of raping a young woman who happened to be of the Mohawk Indians who was living in the Lower East Side. She was 13 years old with her grandfather, and this rapist had attempted to rape her, and when her grandfather, who was in his 70s, intervened, he proceeded to beat the grandfather, and some of the young men in the organization came upon this situation. And they brought them to my office, which was at a motorcycle shop near Tompkins Square Park. And they told the story. So I convened 12 local people on the spot. And we began to hold court. And I asked the young woman to tell her story. I asked her grandfather to tell his story. And then I asked the attempted rapist, to tell his story. And I asked the young men who interceded or intervened to tell their story. Well, when it got to the young man who was accused, he said, "You have no power. You can't do anything." So at that point, I turned it over to the jury. The jury, that was 12 people picked right from the street, found him guilty. And then I sent the young man out to find the basement high enough to hang this young man. Now, I don't know whether I should repeat the details of what happened, but he was tied, a rope around his neck, and he was dragged through the streets to the spot.
Well, Ralph, let me say this before you finish that story.
Go ahead.
The word, he's not an attempt rapist. He's a rapist. That's what he is. You know,
he found him guilty.
Unsuccessful.
Community.
Look, that's right. That's a really a beautiful story. I love that story. Let me say this before you go on. Eddie, things like this happen. Do this things like this happen in your community?
Well, you know, Ralph, that's exactly what we got to do. And sometimes we got to hold court in the streets. We don't want to put justice, judge and jury in our own hands, but we definitely got to call it like it is. And sometimes the people just going to do what they do. And I'm sorry to hear that story, but it just continues to reinforce the fact that we need people on the streets, people in the communities, in the neighborhoods, to continue to be sort of spokespersons and defenders of those that are going to continue to be oppressed.
I don't want to put Reverend in trouble with the total story.
Thanks for sharing that. A very good point.
But we were based on self-defense, self-determination, but we were fortunately in a community that was already well along the line of integrating. And I hate to use that term because it's not correct. People don't understand. People who had the ability to work together, who didn't notice the differences, who noticed and were able to deal with a set of rules and regulations that benefited all of the community. And I'm telling you, all of the community. Now, before this incident was concluded, the police intervened, and then which created another scene. But the moral of the story is we held our ground, we stood firm, and when the police officer in charge and I got into a loud discussion, he asked me how I got the authority to do these things. And I said, "It's my community. I live here. This is a part of my authority because I live here and because the people of the community gave me that authority by supporting me."
It empowers the community when they see that they can actually have an impact on the neighborhood. You know, you remember the old terms probably of si se puede. Brother Cesar Chavez, the organizer out here in California, Northern and Southern California, that word was constantly used, meaning, yes, we can, to let the community know that we can make an impact. I mean, Obama has used that word in his campaign. He should be, yes, I can, because, he's not doing anything for the people. He's doing it all for himself. But he basically stole that slogan because it's a slogan that does apply to us today. And, yes, we can, si se puede, we can make change. And that's a perfect example where if the community is involved and they get a taste for situation where they feel they've made a change, that their voice is heard, maybe not necessarily acted upon, but it puts a fire in the belly, And so I encourage all our listeners, that are listening today, we have to light that flame for others because to their defense, sometimes, as they say, knowledge is power. Sometimes they want to do something, but they just don't know how to start that, ignite that fire. And so sometimes we, those listening on today, they have the fire in their belly. And I praise them and I applaud them. And somehow what we say and what we do, wherever we're at, there's somebody's going to, it's going to light that flame for them.
Yeah, let me say this. Let me say this, please. That the first line of self-defense. It's political consciousness. It is imperative that there be political consciousness in our community. Otherwise, you have chaos. Otherwise, you have personal vendettas. Otherwise, you have the opposite of what this people's struggle is all about. So as we are now in the year 2010, we have to learn from the things that we did back in the 60s and 70s, etc., and we have to tweak those things. We have to remember that our community also needs to be protected as much as possible, and it must be collectively done. So while I certainly appreciate the story that you shared, Ralph, I also think that it is imperative to be aware of all the other ramifications that go along with self-defense, being that beginning with political consciousness, and that, I must maintain, is the beginning place, and then we go from there, because otherwise
yes.
We
Brother Larry, let me piggyback on that, comrade.
Yes.
Let me piggyback on that.
All right.
When I was teaching for a time, young black and Chicano brothers and sisters back in the day, I was fortunate to be mentored by a Puerto Rican woman out of New York, Antonia Pantoja. She formed an organization called the SPIDA. Ralph may be familiar
right
with that organization. And she told me once, as we were talking, she told me that, I told her, well, all we need to do is, you know, I was still young and, you know, still in college. All we need to do is get our people to vote. And this goes with what you were saying, Brother Larry. And she told me, Eddie, but how are you going to vote? How are they going to vote, is what she said. We can't just go out and get people to vote because they might vote against what our goals are. They might vote for Obama, you know. And so education, she stressed, was important in regards to who we were going to get to vote. And, you know, without the education, without the consciousness, they could just vote, you know, our own issues down. So consciousness is so important. Education is so important. History is so important. And I agree with you, comrade. We need to really make sure that a consciousness is one of the first, lessons or one of the first parts of an educational process that all must go through.
Right. Very good. What I mean, let me do this. Rap, before you go on, I want to bring on Libby. Libby, are you there?
I am. I am. And I'll just say, I like, without political consciousness, we have chaos. I think I'm going to put that on a sign and take it out to the street tomorrow.
Absolutely. And you're absolutely correct.
Well, I go for an hour every day at rush hour, and I need a new sign. So I love that. Without
and don't forget to take your Whirlpool sign out there.
I have that out there a lot, too. Without political consciousness, we have chaos. That,
mm-hmm.
that is
exactly
great.
You're right.
Okay, in Berrien County, Michigan, this is this week's report. There's a prosecutor named Gerald Vigansky. If you go on the bhbanco.org website, you'll see a little brief story on him, and he is called a monster, which he is. And the Berrien County commissioners have knowledge of what I'm about to tell you, but they remain mute. City Benton Harbor residents and Berrien County courthouse authorities interact is like seeing naughty children being verbally abused. Authorities rarely show respect to the people they force through their corrupt, illegal system. This week, Prosecutor Gerald Vigansky was verbally attacking and shouting at Benton Harbor residents, Mrs. Freddie Swift and her daughter Vanity, in a hallway. He actually said he would dismiss charges against Charles Washington, age 33. In August, Washington, a Benton Harbor paid police informant, knocked Vanity to the ground, pulled down her underwear. She fought him off, and bloodied, he ran away. An ambulance took Vanity in a state of shock to the hospital, where Washington's fingerprints and blood were found on her clothing and body. He was arrested, released on bond, and charged with only a misdemeanor for his violent crime. informants are above the law and protected in Berrien County. A felony charge and 15-year sentence is the norm for sexual assault. This man is also guilty of resisting arrest and fleeing, but was only charged with trespassing, and the case was eventually dropped. So he's protected. And then Vanity and her mother showed up for the November 16th trial, which, unbeknownst to them, had been canceled. Instead, they were treated to a mad prosecutor, that would be Vanansky, frothing at the mouth, screaming that he was on the side of the man who attempted to rape Vanity. Washington is also known to have attacked, excuse me, and raped several women in Benton Harbor, so this is other cases. And in one recent one, charges against him were dismissed, and, now this happens all the time there, an innocent man was convicted in his place. We also have one other, even much shorter, little story about this prosecutor, Vigansky. Last summer, he prosecuted a case that involved a 17-year-old Benton Harbor High School student, a girl who had a boyfriend. She had no idea that a warrant for this guy's arrest had been issued. She was arrested at school while rehearsing for graduation, a typical technique used in Berrien County to instill group fear. In how many towns would cops wait until a teenager was in school to arrest them? I don't know. Maybe more towns would. I don't know. She innocently told the police she had been in a motel with her boyfriend, so they immediately arrested her for aiding and abetting a fugitive. She had never been in court before and was like a lamb going to slaughter, with Gansky vigorously attacking her, prosecuting her like a pit bull in a hearing where he forced her to plead guilty. Another common occurrence in Berrien County Courthouse. So, like so many Benton Harbor residents before her, whose lives and liberty have been stolen from them by the Berrien County authorities, she will have a lifetime record preventing her from getting employment, entering college, receiving grants, or at least making these things much more difficult. So those are two things on Vigansky.
And also, Vanansky, he's the same guy who when I was on trial, he was the prosecutor in my case also. He went to the cell of this guy named Tommy Travis with the video that you may have, and he told Tommy Travis that if he didn't come in and testify against me, that he was going to do something to him personally. In other words, he was going to do something bad, kill him or whatever it might be. But Tommy Travis refused to go ahead, and they had paid Tommy Travis. They was going to pay him $500 to go in the courtroom and lie. Instead of paying him $500, they paid him $5, and he got mad and switched sides on him. And this just tells you a brief thing about what happened. But what it have done, it has been a tool for me to organize people. See, once people know that what you're saying is the truth, and you stick to truth telling, you can get people to do a whole lot of things. Because if I, the way things was going, they would have continued to pounce on our people. But we got to educate the people. If we don't do nothing else in this world, we got to educate the people about what's really going on. And
yeah,
we got to know, even if it's just four or five at a time, we need to get out there. I call it out in the field. We need to get out in the field and work this thing until we can get this thing better. Because my job is to make sure that they understand that they don't intimidate me, they don't scare me, and I'm here to stand until the end. And I'm going to stand with you.
And Benton Harbor residents are lucky to have Reverend Pinckney, because he is out in the field every single day. I mean, his service to that community is so outstanding. There aren't words to describe. But he did want me to tell one other short story. Should I go ahead with that?
Go right ahead.
This is about Lawrence Sherman, and he's 59, and it's pretty exciting that somebody that age, Benton Harbor resident, was going to graduate in May 2011 from Lake Michigan Community College. But he went into a particular office at the college that finds jobs for students, and told them, you won't find me a job because of the way I look. And he does apparently look fairly unkempt. They asked him to sit down, and these were women. And they even got a, there were two, and then they got a third woman. And he kept trying to get up, and they pushed him. Every time he tried to get up, they pushed him back to sitting down. And they knew they were in trouble, most likely, at some point, because even just touching someone can be called assault, apparently. But they called the police and told the police that this man cursed at them, which is not true. He said that he doesn't use that type of language. And then there were letters written, and there was a hearing, and Reverend Pinckney was involved because Lawrence Sherman got him involved. And he was at the hearing and is certain that Lawrence Sherman is innocent, but they are actually going to expel him in his last year at age 59 at this community college where he would get a degree in May.
And he's an A student. An A student. Haven't got a B yet.
Now, the Executive Dean of Student Services, Dr. John Selman, has written a letter to him stating that he's investigated and there was nobody pushed him. This, you know, never happened.
Well, you know, if I could just interject, it seems, you know, these are just such unfortunate, you know, incidents happening to our people. And, you know, just to kind of come full circle, what we've been talking about is we need to get the community involved. We need to educate. We need to agitate. And, you know, what's being done today, I hope, is another one of either the seeds that are being planted or nurtured, those that are already planted, is to continue to nurture those seeds so our youth will develop, will get the consciousness that's needed. But this is a perfect example of why we must go forward. We must, you know, it may not be like the numbers in the 60s where people were just, you could just, it was there. But we may have the numbers, but they may be silent numbers, but they're there. And we have to, you know, read them out.
Silent numbers don't help.
No, my point about the silent numbers is that they're there, but we got to be the ones to ignite that flame for them. Because there's many out there that need to be educated. That's what I meant. Is we still have the masses, but
right.
We've got to get them involved.
May I continue with the story?
Go ahead, Ralph.
And that street was packed. No one who was there will ever forget that scene. And when I asked the policeman where he lived, I told the rapist, that's the community that you can go and feel safe in, because no rapist will be safe in this community, because this is what we do. And it was education, and it was not the only act. Sometimes, you know, it's a question of the chicken or the egg. People must act. And as Libby said, silent, you know, knowledge is no knowledge at all. As Lynn Stewart says, you test the law by defending your rights. And if you don't exercise your right, then you have given up your right by default. We have a right to self-defense. We must do it. Getting an idea is like sitting on a pin. If it doesn't make you do something, then you didn't get the idea. So now, how do we educate? Our political prisoners have educated by example. This is why they're in jail. They had led us by example. Let us not let their examples die. We must encourage people to lead by example. Exercise the right that you know you have. Because if you do not exercise that right, you have given it up. Yes, to exercise your right, you may pay a penalty. But every time you do, you educate multitudes. So we must activate the multitude.
Absolutely. By Ralph, we only have 5 minutes, and Eddie, I'm going to give you 3 of those minutes. Larry, you take one, and Ralph, you take the other one. Go ahead, Eddie.
Well, this whole discussion, I think, is not just you know, educating the masses, because we're trying to educate, you know, our brothers and sisters to go out there and do something. As the sister just said, you know, a silent comrade, you know, while we appreciate, you know, your sort of alignment, without you getting on the streets, you know, and there's so many of those that that are actually silent. And so we need to get out there. We need to do something. Every little bit of action will cause a reaction. And that's what we need our people to do. We need to take them to their first rally, to their first picket, something that will ignite them, to let them know that they have the power. And as Ralph said, if you don't use your rights, you'll lose your rights. Mm. And so, I mean, it's just definitely, you're all doing it. And I can tell, but the sister's doing it, and Brother Pinckney and my comrade Larry, you're doing it. Ralph, I'm sure you're involved in activities over there in New York. And we just got to continue the fight. We got to stay united. That's important. We got to make sure that there is some consciousness with every action that is done, so we can process with the people involved in those actions, you know, the victories that we have. They may be small, but they are victories. And, you know, just keep doing what we're doing, and it don't matter when it's going to stop. It'll stop when it's time to stop, but we can't stop. And so, again, thank you for allowing me to be on the show. All my brothers and sisters that are listening today, muchas gracias for allowing me to be on the show, and power to the people.
Power. Go ahead, Larry.
I want to give an example, and I'll be very quick, 30 seconds. The bottom line is, when I say political consciousness, this week in the neighborhood in which I live, someone contacted me, a neighbor, and said X amount of houses had been robbed. Okay, and I said, well, okay, it's time for us to come together collectively. Now, I live in a working-class neighborhood. You know, I don't live in a gated community. Now, the bottom line is, I saw this as an opportunity to raise political consciousness. But we had another person who came in and said, you know, I think it was so-and-so who did such-and-such. I said, that's unacceptable. We didn't ask what you think. Okay, let's be conscious about this, pulling together collectively as a community. That's what we've begun to do. And in the process, raising the consciousness in terms of, as you said, comrade, brother, Eddie, all power to the people, letting the people know in a very constructive, positive, forthright manner that we do have the power. Obviously, if we don't use it, we lose it. Again, all power to the people.
Right on. Ralph, go ahead.
Yes, I am so glad to hear that term is spirit. I know that we are together. Our spirits are together. The Puerto Rican sister who started this in New York has carried it to California because we are together. And Yuri Kuchiyama, the woman of Japanese descent who brought the question of reparations to the Japanese internees in California, got it from New York, from Queen Mother Moore. She used her apartment. She had the largest apartment in the projects, 3 bedrooms, so everybody met in her apartment. And she met Queen Mother Moore, Malcolm X, and she carried this message of reparations out to California. We are together. We just have to let our people know that our spirits have been together for a long time, and we must bring our ideas, our attitudes, and as Reverend Pinckney has been successful at doing that, at bringing us together to make us understand how together we are, asking questions about organizations, asking questions about what we're doing, and we're doing it, but we have such a long way to go. And thank you so much for your time. Remember Lynn Stewart,
yes.
150 Park Row, New York, New York, 1007, and 53504-054, write to her. Let her know you're out there listening, because the people on the inside must hear from the people on the outside, for they must never be forgotten, because a movement that forgets its political prisoners is not a movement. So all
That's
of the
right.
brothers, go to Jericho, Jericho. Remember that. Write it and get a list of the brothers in jail, the brothers and sisters, and write to them.
Amen.
So
Libby, go ahead.
You talking to me?
Yes.
When I was in seventh grade in junior high, the English teacher said, we're not going to have English today. I have a speaker talking about propaganda. And it was just like a, you know, like a 50-minute class period that was so effective. I had never heard of the word before. And it changed my thinking from then on. And that was, I was 12, you know. I've often thought that that might be something that would be worth working on, figuring out a really effective class period on propaganda and going around and selling it to teachers.
Wow. Well, listen, on this note, that's what changed my life was The Spook Who Sat by the Door. Those of you who have not read that book, take the time out and read it. It's by Sam Greenlee, The Spook Who Sat by the Door. And on that note, we are out of time. And Eddie, I want to thank you so much. I tell you, it's been an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show. And I tell you, I hear so much about you, and I want you to know that I love you. And I tell you, we are all going to get together, and we're going to have one swinging party. Ralph,
I'm for that, Reverend.
Right, and I want you to know that, you know, that we love you, and we want you to hang in there. Larry, I don't even have to tell you. And Libby, you know I don't have to tell you. So, beautiful show, but here's something maybe that y'all could think of to help me with this, more or less with this case. I'm trying to find a group of women, some of the women groups, one that's against this sexual assault or something like that, against violence against women. What I'm trying to do now, I'm trying to hook up with these women groups, and what I want them, and I want to get them involved in this case with this Vanity Swift case, and maybe they will get involved and maybe they won't. But the point is, if we find one that will get involved, believe me, they're going to pursue this matter like a pit bull.
Mm-hmm.
So if y'all could think of any women group, it don't have to be here in the state of Michigan. It could be anywhere, because then they'll connect me with other people who might be able to help me here. So on that note, we don't have any more time on the radio station, but I just wanted to throw that out there and let y'all know that, hey, I truly, truly enjoyed the show. And I just, you know, I just sit back here and just listen and enjoy every minute of it. I tell you, it was tremendous. I love it. And and you're all true soldiers, true warriors, and I really appreciate that.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
Take care, my brother.
Thank you.
On that note, I'm going to say goodnight to everybody.
Good night.
All right.
Everybody. Don't forget, look up them women groups.
Will do.
All right.
Good night.